Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
All right. We were just talking about how we've got a nice little run here of like fun summer blockbusters that we've been doing. We did Mission Impossible. Then there was 28 Years Later. Today we are doing F1. Are we calling this F1 the movie or F1?
I just call it F1. Yeah, F1.
But then if you look online, so it's like all the posters are just F1. Yeah. I believe in the title sequence of the film, it just says F1. When you're watching the movie, I don't think it says F1 colon the movie, but then a lot of places online, it's listed as F1, the movie, which feels a little, I don't know.
I think it's, if you're searching F1 for the actual racing, if you want to get to the movie on Google, F1, the movie. So I think that's kind of what they're going for, but yeah, everything else is just F1. I think we just call it F1.
We got Jurassic World or whatever it is, Afterbirth or Rebirth.
The Afterbirth. It seems like it would be a more appropriate name.
I think it should be called Jurassic World Afterbirth. Jurassic like World, the T-Rex's placenta comes out. And then we've got Superman. After that, 2025 is really like it feels like it's been a while since we've had a summer with so many that pack such a punch.
Yes.
With its blockbusters.
Absolutely, yeah, and I mean we still, you know, there's still Fantastic Four,
right?
The Naked Gun is coming out as well.
Yeah,
and I mean a few more sprinkled in there as well, but you know these it's a good summer. Finally, I feel like it's a good summer.
Yeah. So, okay. So F1, this movie, I am going to go out on a limb here. We haven't really said much to each other in the pre-roll. No. I think tonight might be a night where you and I are going to disagree a little bit. Yeah.
Okay.
So let me just say, I know that this movie is like tailor-made for an England boy. This movie is an England boy movie. Like, this
funny.
You can't be a member of that family and not watch this movie and be like, oh yeah.
You know, the funny thing is, I saw this with Chandler, my brother, and we took our kids and we took our boys, and yeah, we loved it. I was totally into it. I all the way, man. I was like, gave in, and I loved it. It was so much fun. So you are obviously not as much on that fence.
Listen, there is a lot to really enjoy about this movie, and it's all the stuff that I expected. I was like, I kind of, in more or less, I got the movie I thought I was gonna get.
Yes.
I just have issues with the construction of it from the script. I felt like the movie was too long. I feel like I think it just, it does things that the formula of this film do. Like, it's following kind of a beat sheet of like what a racing movie should be, or a sports movie should be. And to me, it was like, in order to break up the monotony or the familiarity or the predictability of the formula, they decided to just add in a few too many of the twists and turns for me. Like, where there's a lot of things in these types of movies that happen. Like, there are several, or at least one, all is lost moments where it's like the team has fallen apart and, you know, a key player on the team is injured. Gary Bertier gets in a car accident. And what are we going to do? You know, the other team is cheating and they're trying to keep Coach Yost out of the Hall of Fame. And how, what are the moments where the team has to overcome and that's kind of sports drama, construction 101. And this movie, to me, it has those moments, and I expected it to have those moments, but it has like five of them, and they just kept happening. And I was like, okay, I was like, let's just finish the movie now, please.
I think you're totally valid. It very, very much followed the sports drama outline.
Yeah.
And I saw that the entire way. The thing that I didn't mind about it, like, once I figured, I was like, okay, this is just a standard sports film, but they did it so well. Like, I, and like you said, this is, I love, I really like Drive to Survive, right? I like watching F1. Mm-hmm. It's a great sport, and it's really cool. You know, racing is just really cool. It's really dramatic. So I feel like they did it so well that I was into it. Like, okay, I'm not going to expect anything more than a sports movie. Like, that's just what this is totally going to be. But yeah, it really, the thing that I did like, though, because I see exactly what you're talking about. There are definitely all these moments of like all is lost. Like he get the one driver, PJ, he gets in a car accident, right? And it's like, oh no, what's gonna happen? And then they keep going on. And JP. Then JP, sorry, yeah, no. JP gets in an accident, and then Brad Pitt gets kicked off the team. You know, he gets in an accident. So like it was kind of like, okay. But the thing that made it a little bit different is that we are following two separate storylines,
right,
of Brad Pitt and JP, who are kind of have their own story arcs, and each of the two are protagonists and antagonists to each other,
right? And I also thought that dynamic, while interesting, took too long to get to some kind of resolution, and the resolution it got to felt a little unearned to me. By the time we finally got to it, I was like, I didn't see the movie actually earn this. Like I saw them at odds with each other for the entire runtime of the film, which again is kind of long for a movie like this. Like it's two and a half hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2.5 hour long movie. And then in like the very, very, very last minutes of the film, they were just like, hey, you're all right, kid. You know, like, all right, you too, old timer. And it's like, but I was like, when did this happen? And it just seemed like they just decided like, hey, we got to win this last race, you know, because the movie's about to end and it's the last race of the season. And it's like, sure. But, I felt like, and even hearing Brad Pitt talk about this movie in interviews and stuff, it's clear to me that, and this is, I think that the filmmaking team has been very transparent about this, that Joe Kaczynski and Brad Pitt wanted to make a movie about Formula One racing.
Yeah.
Because Joe Kaczynski wanted to do it because he had this tech that he developed while making Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, yeah.
And Brad Pitt wanted to do it because he's just a huge fan of Formula One.
Yeah.
And then they just had to reverse engineer kind of a reason for the, or you know, a script, because they were like, we've got the tech, we've got the desire to make a movie about racing, now what's the, and then they just kind of went and like we said, like it's just the nuts and bolts of a sport, of a typical sports drama, and then you just surround yourself with like lots of really high caliber artists and you know from on the filmmaking side, on the cinematography team, the effects team, the sound design. I loved Hans Zimmer's score. Immediately I was like noticing the score, and then when it said Hans Zimmer did the music, I was like, oh cool, like that's a cool choice, and it was a cool score from him. And I, you know, the stuff that Joe Kaczynski wanted to do that brought him into the project is cool. It's cool to watch Brad Pitt really be in that cockpit and really be driving these cars. It's all like that, all that stuff is like really works, but it's just the script aspect where they're like, cool, we got to figure out a reason why to go out onto the track and play with these toys and do fun stuff.
Yeah.
To me was like, I think they almost tried too hard to make where it was like, hey, you know what? This movie is just, let it just be what it is, which is just like an excuse for Brad Pitt to, for us to watch Brad Pitt drive in some races.
Yeah.
And I'd say just a little simplification on the,
I think that's totally, I get exactly what you're talking about. And I think it is, the ending is probably the weaker, I don't want to say weakest, but it is more of a weak part. I was able to make the jump and I thought, okay, they set up enough to make it like, okay, this works. Like the ending is good, but it did feel like there could have been a stronger resolution between JP and Brad Pitt's character. Like that could have, there could have been something a little bit more.
Yeah.
Cause it was a little weak, like it could have, but it, again, it was set up enough.
I think that it just could have been done, or I think it, like what they used in the script is the right thing to use, which is, in a moment where JP and Brad Pitt's character Sonny are having their best race of the movie, it's raining, but they're like, it's their best race that they've done as a team so far. Brad Pitt is trying to get JP, you know, into first position on the track, and he's telling him to wait to overtake on this straightaway, but JP wants, he sees an opening on the curve and he wants to do it early, but he's got old tires on a slick road and it results in him having this huge crash. And then while JP is recovering, Brad Pitt and his JP's replacement go on like a nice little run of like four or five races without JP where they do pretty well. Right. And I think the movie has an opportunity there to just humble JP then and have JP get in the simulator and see that he was wrong then and have him come back to the team and just be like, hey man, I checked it out and you were right, you know, and just like simplify it. But instead, like, the movie goes on, like JP comes back and he's like mad that they were doing well without him. And then he like sabotages the teams because he's mad at, and it was hard for me to, like you said, these are two protagonists who are each other's antagonists. It was hard for me the entire film to ever latch into JP as a protagonist worth rooting for. He only ever felt like an antagonist for me. And I could tell that the movie wanted me to feel him as both. And I was like, I only care about Brad Pitt. I was just like, I only care about Sonny. Like,
right. It's a good point. It really was. I actually, you know, your fix that you said, just have him when he comes back, actually have him be humbled. And then they go into the final couple races and have to, you know, they have a bumpy last, it's like second to last race and they don't make it. And then the last race is when they really have to figure it out. That actually would, it would cut down the runtime and it would probably make, you know, cause if this was at 2 hours, a little over 2 hours, it would be, I think it would probably be even better, but I was okay with it. I do think there is a better movie that could have been made, but what we got, I mean, it's fun. Like it is the top gun of racing movies. Cause you see, like, it's not CG. I mean, I know that they use CG, but it's so fun and it's so great to look at.
Yeah. And it's like the Mission Impossible of racing movies, because you've got Brad Pitt, who's a major movie star, in the cockpit of this car. And he's driving this thing at 200 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And I've heard interviews with him talking about how, like he said that an insurance guy came to set and told them 140 top speed, because he saw what they were doing and he was like, no way. And he said 140 speed limit. And then Pitt and Kaczynski had to explain to this guy, it's actually less safe for us to drive these cars slower than it is to drive it, because we need the downforce of the G's that we're pulling to stay on the track with some of these turns. And it requires us to drive that fast safely. Like that's how they are built to drive that fast on these tracks that have these inclines on the turns. And I love that story, but also this is another problem I have with the film. Is one of the kind of marquee aspects of the technical construction of this film is that Joe Kaczynski had this camera rigging that he was able to do for Top Gun Maverick on these on these fighter jets, and he wanted to do a similar rig on these F1 cars. And it's a really cool angle that we're getting as the audience to be in the cockpit with the drivers and have these cameras that can swivel on a 360, you know, go all the way around and show us the track, and they can show us the front view, and they can show us all the cars going by, so we can really feel that we're in there. My problem is, to me, it gets limiting after a little bit. After a little bit, I was like, oh, we're kind of stuck in there. And we're kind of like stuck in this sort of limiting viewpoint where I wanted to see more of each individual track and like what makes that, like me as a person who just doesn't know a lot about F1, I was like, I'd like to see the difference between these. And I wasn't, I felt like for most of the races, I was just sort of here with Brad Pitt's face or like looking out his cockpit, which is kind of a difficult view anyway, because there's a big bar down the middle of the cockpit. Yeah. And I was like, I kind of want to get outside of the car and maybe do some stuff with drones, or maybe do some stuff, I don't know, where I'm seeing more of the and we do, it's not that we're all in the cockpit. We definitely get more variation, but I felt like that sort of like being the thing that's pulling Kaczynski to the project with Pitt being like, we're going to rig these cars up with, I felt like we got stuck in that world sometimes visually, and it made the different races sort of bleed together visually for me.
I get that. Yeah. They did have a few aerial shots, like drone shots. they didn't do anything. You know, recently they've done a lot of different drone shots for action movies where the drone like really flies in and like, you know, goes all around the car or goes around the whatever it is that right. they're filming, right? And right. they do kind of these crazy shots. That could have been fun. That could have actually been really cool to see, kind of to do some of that. My thought about that is, though, so they had they went to F1 and mm-hmm. they're like, hey, we want to film this, right? And they yeah. had to like jump through a lot of hoops to get this to happen. So they filmed at actual F1 races.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah, crazy.
So my guess is they were limited in what they could and couldn't do. And also if they're just getting stuff, they could probably only do certain things, right?
Totally.
And like, so my guess is like, okay, we got approved on this rig. And also to make it look more real, we're not going to do any of the crazy drone stuff because that could also get in the way. Right. And who knows what could happen with that, right? It might look slower as well because you'd probably have to slow down the cars. So that's probably my thought, but I totally see what you're saying. I think they could have done more, but I'm wondering if the constraints of the project itself are what made them kind of stick with that, those shots.
I think you're probably right. I think you're probably spot on. I mean, this movie has a drone shot at in its opening few minutes that yeah. is amazing. I think it's after yeah. the opening race when right. someone, it's Brad Pitt or JP, are driving on a practice track, and we start from like way far back and mm-hmm. we go all the way down to the car yeah. with the, and like that was, I was like, that's a, that, I leaned over to my girlfriend, I was like, that was sick. I was like that was awesome. Yeah. I was like, we were so right. far out, we came right. all the way, like that yeah. was sick. And that's cool. And I do think that there is something to be said for us staying more in the cockpit, lending itself to what a lot of people are experiencing, which I'm sure is the experience you had. And I definitely had this experience at moments in the film, which is it's meant to feel more grounded and more yes. realistic.
Yeah.
It's meant
yeah.
to feel like what it would feel like if you were the driver. It's meant right. to give you the experience of right. put you in the driver's seat rather, you know, and I think that there's validity to that approach.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a comparison that it was the movie that I couldn't stop thinking about when I walked out of the theater.
Okay. And I'm wondering if it's the same one that I'm thinking of. Let me see. Is it from the early 2000s?
It is.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
It's from the year 2008. And,
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of a crazy comparison.
Okay. Never mind. And this is not the one.
It might not be the one you're thinking of, but the movie I kept thinking of was Speed Racer. And,
okay.
And Speed Racer is obviously a completely different, like,
yes,
aesthetically, it's yes. a completely different and tonally a completely mm-hmm. different film, but its construction follows a lot of the same beats of F1. Okay. And I think at its heart, it wants to talk about the same thing. Mm-hmm. It wants to talk about like the passion that it takes, the drive and the commitment and the excellence. The Wachowskis were trying to make a movie about artists pushing back against the corporatism of the film industry and yeah. capitalism and things like that. And I think at the core of it is like what's pure for these drivers is the art of driving and the like the right. kind of the melding of like the relationship between the driver and the car and listening to yeah. the car and hearing yeah. what the car wants. And it doesn't really necessarily matter to them the company's bottom line, who they drive for, whether it's Mercedes or Ferrari or, you know, yeah. what matters to them is just driving. And that's mm-hmm. with Brad Pitt's character. That's what I got, is that from his character, it was like, I don't really care where I am. I don't really care if I'm on like a random beach somewhere or yeah. if I'm at Daytona or, you know, like I just want to drive. And that to me is like who Speed Racer is in the movie Speed Racer is. He's fighting against the corporatism of the racing world and yeah. the way that these corporations have been fixing the races for generations and stuff. And that kind of breaks his heart. But at the end of the day, he's just like, I just love driving. Like my family loves mm-hmm. cars, but they love racing. And I think that they both try to give you a really visceral experience of auto racing, even though Speed Racer is this psychedelic, otherworldly vision of it,
right.
and it's almost completely animated. But I just watched Speed Racer last night to be like, hey, do I have a warped memory of this movie? Because I know that the movie got panned when it came out, but I was a person yeah. I saw it in theaters in 2008, and it was already getting bad reviews. And I saw it with a group of friends, and we all yeah. kind of looked at each other at the end of it, and we're like, I kind of loved that. And everyone was like, yeah, me too. We were like, I thought that was kind of awesome. And I've been seeing more and more people like returning to this film lately and being like, I think that movie got a bad rap in 2008 because it was doing things technically that we weren't really ready for. Like the Wachowskis were doing things in that film that nobody had done before and or since. Like, I have not seen anybody return to trying to make a film as visually frenetic and maximalist as that film is. Like, watching it last night, I was like, this movie's crazy. Its editing style is crazy. But it does a thing that Joe Kaczynski, I think, is also trying to do with F1, where he's trying to, like, get you emotionally caught up in the high stakes of the racing world.
Right, right.
And Speed Racer, for me, subjectively, does that better. Like, it pulls me into being, like, emotionally invested in, even though it's completely, it's a cartoon and it's fake and the cars in it don't exist and they are doing things that real cars can't do. There's like a human core to it where I'm still like, somehow this is for me a better racing movie than this movie that's way more grounded and way more realistic.
Interesting.
To me, it's like, this movie makes me care more about, like, Speed Racer to me makes me care more about racing than F1 does. F1, I just was like, and I can't even really say why. I think it's like there's something in the delivery of the story and the characters and the performances to me in Speed Racer that I get latched into. And then also I think that what the Wachowskis wanted to do technically is actually executed so amazingly well. And for a lot of people at the time, it was very overwhelming. But I'm like, that's what I think it's meant to be. It's meant to be this sensory overwhelm of like sound and visual and like, and they're doing things with the camera where they're zapping between different cars and like almost never cutting and like doing these crazy trans, you know, and I just feel like it gets the feeling of the speed and like the roar of the engine and the adrenaline of it all. I feel it more in that movie, but their construction, I left F1 and I was like, that was like if Speed Racer was very grounded and realistic. But like very similar in its construction about like at the core of it is just like a guy who wants to drive and he just wants to do his thing, you know?
Yeah, I have actually never seen Speed Racer. I'll have to check it out because I've heard both sides of the story on that. People who love it and people who hate it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a really silly movie, but it knows that it's silly, and
It's not shying away from it. It's leaning into it. Yeah. I've seen pieces of it, and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I'll have to look at it. The movie that I was thinking about. So in 2001, a movie came out that was called Driven. Do you remember this movie with Sylvester Stallone and a bunch of other people that never really had careers after this movie?
Wasn't Sunshine from...
was in it. The Titans, another sports movie that you've already referenced. I don't even remember his name, but it's not about F1. I guess Sylvester Stallone tried to make a movie about F1, but they wouldn't let him do it. Like, you know, this was back in 2001 when it wasn't nearly as big in America and nearly as big... Anyway, so he just made it about, it was more like IndyCar or Kart or something. But that movie is very, very similar to this movie where there's a young up and coming driver and they get an old driver who's Sylvester Stallone to come in and kind of teach the kid the ropes. And, you know, he is really good. And like the kid is, you know, he's too into himself and he doesn't see his own faults. And anyway, these two movies, Driven and F1, are very, very similar. But F1 was executed so much better that it's like, I didn't really care because they made a much better movie with F1. And, you know, Driven was just kind of it wasn't that great. But that was the movie that I felt was extremely similar. That's more of a story-wise and the fact that it is a racing movie. But I really do need to check out Speed Racer.
You should. I'd be interested to hear what you think, because it is. Yeah. I think just it's an experience to sit down and just watch it start to finish. They do things with that screenplay and with the editing style that I think are so kind of, again, like I said, like I've never really seen it before or since, yeah, where like the amount of information that they're able to deliver in a single sequence of like exposition and do it all kind of seamlessly with flashback and stuff, but like make it all feel fluid is so impressive to me. And that it all still feels balanced in this really like acid trip, psychedelic, crazy, over the top maximalist thing. Yeah. But then it's like balanced with this, like these moments of like real heart and humanity, and Susan Sarandon's like incredible in it. And Emile Hirsch is really good in it. And it's just, yeah, it's like we watched it last night and it still worked for me. Like it's got but so many of the beats are similar. Like this, the end of the F1, when Brad Pitt is sort of flying, similar thing that happens in Speed Racer where they kind of do a callback to something that was talked about earlier in the film, where earlier in the film, Brad Pitt gives this speech where he's like, you know, sometimes when I'm driving, everything goes quiet and I feel like and there's sort of a thing in Speed Racer's finale too, where they call back to like, sometimes when you're driving, I watch you do things and it feels like you're just making art and it feels, you know,
actually the same thing in Driven as well.
He of course.
Humming and it's like he's flying. Yeah. So yep.
Yeah. And it's like, I think racing movies have these beats and these formulas and it works. But I think Speed Racer just for me takes it to a level aesthetically and energetically where I'm like, the thing they were talking about earlier in the film, I see it happening and it doesn't feel like, oh, of course this is, it's like, oh wow. Like that's 10 times better than it was even described in the scene earlier. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it happens in this movie, it's just sort of something I've been waiting for. Like, I know that we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
And then it's like that moment and I'm like, yeah, okay, we're there. Yeah. And it's cool. It's cool. But let's get into this movie. Spoiler alerts, go watch F1. It's a fun movie. See it in the theater. See it somewhere loud. I will say this about my experience. I don't think my theater was loud enough for my
time. Want it loud. This movie, and for sure in the theater, like it's a fun theater experience.
Yeah.
It's going to be better seeing this in the theater than at home. But it, like you said, the score in this movie is awesome. And even just the songs, like the songs that they choose, you know, great popular songs, great new artists, and also old artists, Ed Sheeran, all these people, just a fun movie to see in the theater. And this is really like the epitome of a blockbuster. Like you can go and turn off your brain. If you don't want to think about the story, you don't really have to think about the story. The story at least has enough that it'll get you in. And it's better than the average. It's better than the average sports movie, but still, as you know, as kind of you feel, it definitely hits all those beats for sure. So go see it in the theater though.
Definitely. And see it on a big screen and see it loud.
Yeah,
I think that the sound design, the sound mixing, the engines, the roar is meant to be sort of felt more than anything.
Yeah.
So this movie opens, as many racing movies do, with a race. We are in the middle of Brad Pitt is doing some endurance racing, which one thing I did like about this movie is I liked the way that it taught me as a person who knows very little about racing. Mm-hmm. It taught me about what professional racing actually looks like and the different kinds that there are and the different challenges. And like the idea of a race that goes for like 36 hours or something or 48 hours is crazy to me. Like the idea of just a car that's just going around a track for just, and two drivers that are just taking turns, like driving for like 3 or 4 hours at a time and then getting out and being like, and then like, you know, I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And
Ford versus Ferrari did that really well with Le Mans and everything, but totally. This one starts out with, I think it's a 24 hours at Daytona.
Yeah. Maybe that's it's that. Yeah.
At. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, and it's and Brad Pitt is napping in a trailer, and he gets woken up because it's his turn to come take over, and you know, and his partner has fallen behind and lost the lead, and he gets in the car and gets the lead, and it right away we're like thrown into the action of this thing, and we really see Brad Pitt's character and the way his guy, the aggressive driving style of Sonny Hayes, and he gets the lead and turns the car back over to his partner, and he's like, "You lose that lead, I'll kill you."
Yeah,
you know? And and
really sets up his character pretty well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they win that race. They do well. But we learned.
Yeah, he doesn't want the trophy. He doesn't want the watch. He's already got one. Mm. He's and then he gets in his van and he goes.
Yeah, and it's also like there's a superstition about not wanting to. He never wants to touch the trophy.
Yeah,
he never wants to. It's like he doesn't. You know, like he does these things. Like we see him. He's in his trailer and he's getting ready and he takes out a deck of cards and we see that he's pretty good with the cards and then he pulls a card out, sticks it in his pocket, doesn't look at it.
Yeah,
and so we're sort of learning things about his character that he's got these little rituals that he does. And this is a thing about the driving world is people talk about how much of a mental game it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That. And it has to be like in order to be operating a vehicle that's driving hundreds of miles per hour and making split second decisions, you have to have a lot of confidence in your decision making abilities and your, you know, you can't really think twice or second guess, you know.
No, you got to be a type A personality. You've got to take risks and you got to choose immediately. Right. You've really got to be on it. Yeah. And I did like his little rituals. I liked the card. I liked that they paid it off, which we'll get to in the end, but they never really, I kind of like that little aspect. There were a lot of little aspects that they had in this movie that were kind of fun, but yeah, he has his ritual, but he doesn't want to be tied down. Like you immediately know, like, okay, he knows who he is as a person.
He lives in a van, he drives around and he finds different races to compete in and he tries to win because he likes winning and he likes driving well and driving fast he's just sort of in the wind and
total freedom. I think he says later.
Pretty quickly, Javier Bardem approaches him, and this is an old friend we find out from back when they used to race they used to race Formula One together. And Javier Bardem's great in everything, and he's great in this movie. He really elevates the film.
I don't like he's just playing a very standard character, but he brings so much to it. Like you give anybody that character, they're going to play it fine, but no one's going to play it as well as he did. Like he's supposed to be a nice guy. He's the owner of the team So he's the owner of the team and he's kind of on his last option. He's telling Brad Pitt, his driver, went to another team and they have a new driver who's really good, but he's really inexperienced. So they only have 9 races left. And they need to finish first in one of the races or the team is going to be sold. And again, like, so he's pushing everything, but he's never a bad guy. He's making decisions based on money, but he's like, they have a really long history together. They rode together. And for some reason, Javier Bardem is just like I was rooting for him the most.
Yeah, and I liked that aspect. I mean, you know, Javier Bardem's character is the guy who he's the owner of this team, and he tells Brad Pitt that he's out $350 million, and that he's in the hole $350 million, and that if they don't win at least one race, or you know, at least get some points on the board, because Formula One is a points based season, kind of like almost like Premier League soccer or football.
So if you 1 through 10 gets points for the team and for the drivers. And if you're number 11, you get no points. And I mean, number 10 gets 1 point. And it's like, I can't remember. I think it's 20. Number one, I think gets 26 points, but it's all very points based. So they have different championships. There's a constructors championship, which is for the team. And then they have the driver's championship, which is for the driver. And they have all these other little things as well, like fastest lap and all that.
And that's all like, you know, just like fun things. But basically he's like the board will force the sale of the team and he'll be out. And it is interesting the way that this movie gets you to pull for, because a lot of times, like Javier Bardem's character in this formula would be maybe more of like a conniving businessman he's very human and we root for him. And I like that aspect of it, that he and Brad Pitt are just like buddies.
And that was one of the things that's like that character is usually the bad guy.
Right.
He's usually the one that just cares about money and doesn't care about the person, but he cares about the person.
Well, and in this movie, they wind up making the bad guy like a surprise. Which I thought, again, was like a twist where I'm like, I'm fine with that twist, but maybe have it happen just sooner, or maybe, you know, just maybe don't even, maybe it doesn't need to be even concealed. Maybe it can just be known that that guy's the guy that who's pushing for the sale of the team. You know, and then that we know that Javier Bardem and Brad Pitt need to like compete against that guy and what he wants. I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, Javier Bardem comes to Brad Pitt, gets him to come out and be his second driver on his team. The team has a new rookie driver who's a talented up and comer, but the team is in last place and their car is the kind of the big problem right now.
They don't have a good car. It's really slow. They can't get anywhere with it, which again, in F1 is, I mean, I guess not again, but in F1, the car is as important as the driver in many ways. Cause it's like, they have all these engineers making the car better, where all the racers are really, really good. But if you have a crappy car, you're not going to be able to do anything.
What's crazy is it's a sport where we're talking about tenths of a second. Yeah, we're talking about like the car's like, it's weird to call the car crappy, but it's like, the car is probably amazing. It's probably an amazing feat of engineering. It's just like slightly less amazing than the other 10 or 11 cars on the track, you know? But it's like a few seconds less amazing. Mm-hmm. And that makes all the difference, you know, that it just doesn't catch the wind the right way on certain turns. And, you know, I thought it was really interesting the way that this movie teaches the viewer about, if you're a casual viewer, it teaches you about the racing world and shows you like the size of an operation of a professional Formula One racing team.
Yeah.
Like how many people are working on these cars and working, you know, for two people to be driving them. And the amount, you know, just the amount of early on when Brad Pitt comes to this team, he's doing some test laps to see if he can beat JP's time. And he winds up pushing the car a little bit too hard and he crashes it. And in my mind, I thought like, oh, geez, that's like an $8 million car, you know, like Bardem's gonna. But then it's like, oh, no, like the teams are used to crashes. Like they have the car itself is like the body is all of the pieces. They have spares for all of the pieces.
Yeah.
I just didn't realize that.
Yeah, it is crazy. Like, so I love F1 Drive to Survive on Netflix. It's a great show. You should watch it. Really, really good. But I learned that as well. I was like, oh, wow, these cars crash like all the time. And I mean, there are different, you know, you can have a much more severe crash and that can cause problems, but you can have a crash like Brad Pitt did and then they just fix it. And then the next day it's fine. Like, I mean, it obviously takes a lot, but yeah, they crash a lot. Everything is meant to be replaced for the most part, besides like the entire engine. Right. But he crashes and he's like, all right. And they're mad because they got to fix it. But it really ultimately is the same car. They just put it right back together. So kind of a cool aspect of the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. And pretty early on, you know, there's like 9 races left in the season. So this is another thing is like, like in the movie Speed Racer, there are 4 races and really there's like 3.5. Like there's like one of them you see like, but there's like a race at the beginning and, you know, Speed wins. And it's similar to like watching Brad Pitt race at the beginning of this movie. He wins. It establishes to the audience what a good driver he is. Then there's like a middle of the movie race. That's like a big middle of the movie set piece. And then there's the final race. And there's like a little one in between where he like loses a race. And it's like this, we see like 30 seconds. This movie has like 11 races. If you include the beginning race and Daytona and the 9 that we see, and then like flashbacks and, it's a lot, which, you know, it's Formula One, the movie. So
it makes sense. How many races? It's 20 something races. Yeah.
So I could see, and I get that some of those races, it's fair to say are in a little montage that it happens.
Yeah, they are.
Like,
yeah.
They do like 4 or 5 in a little montage, but I just at a certain point was kind of like, I didn't even realize it till the movie was over, but I was just sort of like, yeah, all right, let's go. Let's go to the one where they win now.
I
know we all know it's coming. And it's like, there's a lot of things that this movie sets up because the formula sets it up. It's like Javier Bardem's got to say, if you come and race in Formula One, it's the only sport in the world where you'll know that if you win,
Yeah.
Just even if just for one day, on that day that you win, you can say you're the best in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, like, they're going to pay that off. Like, they're like, there's all these things that movies like this do where you know that they're going to have to. But yeah, anyway, Brad Pitt is critical of the car that they're driving in this team. And the car was built by the technical director of this team, is this like hot Irish woman. And immediately I was like, Brad Pitt and that girl are hooking up.
Oh yeah. That was very, very obvious that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Very obvious. But yeah, she's played, her name is something. What is it? Kate McKenna is the character's name. Carrie Condon. She's the one who plays her. I thought she was great. I actually really liked her story. I think Carrie Condon is a great actor.
Fantastic.
I really like her. I loved her in The Banshees of Inisherin. Mm-hmm. And I've only seen a few other movies that she's in, but every time she's in them, she's just a really good, solid actor. And she did great in this movie. Again, everybody is like bringing really good, like Brad Pitt does a great job. Javier Bardem adds something that for some reason is really, really good. And even this newcomer, he's not too much of a newcomer, but JP, played by Damson Idris, he was awesome too. I feel like he's probably going to get a lot bigger because of this movie, but everybody's bringing more than they probably should, or maybe not more than they should, but they're bringing everything and it makes it a lot better.
Javier Bardem's got that Ralph Fiennes thing where,
yes,
like that we were talking about with 28 Years Later.
Where absolutely.
Just like anything Javier Bardem's in, he's going to, like, even like the Little Mermaid live action thing, like Javier Bardem has tried it. Like, there were scenes where I was like, he does not need to be giving this much for this movie, but he was like really trying to give a lot of like pathos and weight and sincerity to some of his scene work. And I was like, man, they don't, this movie does not deserve him. It does not deserve
the
work that he's putting in. But
So she is the one that has built the car. She's, you know, she's not the team principal. That's some other guy. I can't remember, but there's everybody kind of thinks that like this team is not a joke, but nobody's really taking it too seriously because they haven't even in the 2 years that they've been in, they haven't scored a point at all. So nobody's really like giving everything. But, and when Brad Pitt comes in, he's like their ninth choice, right? Which was kind of a, you know, he comes in and nobody thinks he can do it. He wrecks the car, but he's talking about how good it was. And Carrie Condon kind of likes that because JP doesn't know how to talk about the car. Like, he doesn't know what to tell her to make the car better. But Brad Pitt like immediately knows what's wrong. And she kind of like really likes that Brad Pitt is experienced and knows how to talk about the car.
But I think there's also an aspect of her character that like doesn't want to be, because she's she's the first female technical director of an F1 team, at least, you know, so it's a big deal that she's in the position that she's in. And I think there is an element of their relationship where she's like, I don't want you telling me, you know, how to do my job. Like, I'm here for a reason and I want to prove that I can do this on my own merit. But
totally.
I think that she sees that he knows more about the construction of the car than JP does. I like this little exchange where JP goes like, when was the last race that you won?
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt goes like, 2 nights ago, Daytona. And then he's like, no, I mean, sorry, real racing, F1. And he's like, oh, well, then I've won as many races as you have.
Yeah, that was great. I love that. And they use that in the trailer too. And I was like, oh, what a comeback.
Yeah. Like, she's like, oh, I've won the same amount of races you have.
Yeah.
Which is zero.
Oh, the same as you. Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. They immediately have tension.
Yeah.
They don't like each other, which is totally understandable.
I really like this this first press conference where this guy is questioning Brad Pitt, and he's like, so you he's like, after you left F1, he's like, you had like a string of divorces, two divorces and an annulment. He's like, then you just sort of, you've been living in, and Brad Pitt keeps with to every question, Brad Pitt goes, yeah. And then he goes, and now you live out of a van. He's like, yeah. He's like, and then like, you've never really been able to, you've had all this like debt and everything that you've had to pay back. He's like, yeah. And he's like, so any regrets? Would you do anything differently? And he just goes, yeah. And then he just, that's it. And I'm like, that's a great exchange. Like, and that's a great like Brad Pitt thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. His character is very self-assured. Mm-hmm. He knows exactly what he wants, right? Like, he's, which is in contrast to JP, who hasn't really figured out what he wants. mm-hmm. or kind of, you know, it's not so much about, everything is about the race for Brad Pitt.
Right.
And JP hasn't gotten to that place yet. He hasn't realized that like everything is about the race. And this scene was so great because he is, you know, they're asking him all these questions, and I did love that he didn't elaborate at all. He just says, yes, that's it.
Yeah.
And he's done. Yeah. It was pretty funny.
Just gets up and walks out. But yeah, so they go and race together. And is it the first race where he starts doing the Plan C thing?
I think it is. I think it was. And I because they're going out and they're starting, and he just like, well, this was great too. They start the race and Brad Pitt pretends to like stall and like, oh, I don't know how, I'm not sure how to get it out of first.
Oh, right. Yeah. Cause they do a practice lap before. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everybody warms up their tires and everything. So he waited to the last possible second. And this was all like a part of his plan, which is he pretended like he couldn't get out of first gear. Like he didn't know how to get the car started. So everybody goes and then he goes and they all have to wait for him, but his tires are warm while everybody else's have cooled down. Right. So it's like, this is the first thing that shows that like, oh, he's really, really, they keep calling him cheeky. Right. He's really, really cheeky. And he is, he kind of bends the rules to the, right before breaking.
Yeah. They kind of, you know, they call it like a rope-a-dope. Like it's like you know, it's like a little, he's doing like a little misdirect thing where he's just giving himself, cause he knows he's in a car that is, so he's in like, he kind of, his character says this, like you create your own brakes.
Yes.
Like you don't wait for a lucky break. You create your own brakes. And so he does this thing, but Kerry Condon as the technical director has given them two plans of attack for the race. They do this sort of pre-race meeting. And again, I liked all this stuff. I liked seeing what the teams get together. They put the headphones on. They all go over the game plan. I liked all this stuff that felt really realistic. And like, it just felt like you're really a part of this team. She gives plan A and plan B. And then Brad Pitt goes like, you know, when he gets on the track, he goes like, hey, keep your, you know, be ready for plan C. And they're like, what's
plan C? I think she says like, she's like, we're not going to do plan C because it's not going to work or something.
Oh, right.
And he's like, no, we're doing plan C. Like when he's on the track.
Yeah, that's right. And we don't know what plan C is, but plan C, it turns out, is he's going to intentionally kind of get cars to clip him and break pieces of his car off so that they fall onto the track. And then a cleanup car has to come out, which this is the stuff I liked learning about. Was like, I didn't know that there were like things like, you know, stoppage and things. And it's like, obviously there's gotta be ways to get debris off the track when cars are going 200 miles per hour. And that would obviously slow the race down. It would mean that cars are going to take advantage of that moment to maybe pull in and get new tires or, you know,
So he does that a couple times, and it allows JP to move up so that nobody gets too far away from him. And so the whole thing that he is trying to do is he's trying to get JP to just score a point,
right?
To just get in that 10th position.
And does this read true to you as an F1 fan? Like that someone could hypothetically do this, could game the rules like this to,
I don't know. I don't think so. But it's like also in any other sport, like that wouldn't happen, but you kind of just like give into it. And I mean, I'm an F1 fan, but I my knowledge is so small that like, you know, there are a ton of things that people will do. There are a ton of strategies, right, where you can a lot of this, like the clipping, I don't know. I don't know how that, you know, I don't know if anybody's good enough to just clip enough just to get that little bit, you know, but I was able to get into it. I think a really huge F1 fan would be nice to hear from them, but there are definitely some things like you can slow down. You can intentionally crash somebody or you can intentionally do all these things you can cut somebody off when you come out of the pits, you know, or whatever.
Right.
So I think
picking your moment to come out of the pit. So that
I think everything was at least believable enough.
Right.
So,
yeah. And I kind of like this, that it's like Brad Pitt's character knows like, hey, and early on, as we're going into these different races and stuff, it's like Brad Pitt is sort of arguing with this team and with the pit bosses.
Actually the first race he does that with his tires, but they're both in last place.
Right.
The first place, they're both in last place, and they crash. Yeah. They both crash because Brad Pitt won't let him through.
Yeah. He won't give up track position.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So that's the first race and they both crash. Then this second race is when he allowed, because they're like, listen, you need to play as a team. Like, you know, Kerry Condon tells Brad Pitt, like, you know, I'm not going to listen to you about the car unless you finish a race. And JP is like, he was like, you know, the cameras were on him and Brad Pitt's telling him, like, we didn't win anything. Like, what are you celebrating? You know, and that, anyway, the, yeah, all of that happens also before, like, the
yeah,
second race.
Yeah, the pit crew had like a mistake. Like, there's a girl on the pit crew who accidentally like drops a tool underneath JP's tire and it causes like a 7-second pit stop instead of what they usually aim for, which is crazy in this sport, which is like a 3-second pit stop. Like, you want to be able to change all four tires in 3 seconds and have that car back on the road.
Yeah.
And it's like a 7-second pit stop, which is disastrous in a sport like this that that's made or that you make or break you on tenths of a second.
Right.
And I liked this moment where JP comes into, you know, and he yells at this woman who dropped the tool. And then Brad Pitt comes in and he goes, hey, that, you know, you made a mistake. It's okay. Don't worry. You know, but then I liked it. The guy's like, hey, we're teammates, man. And he's like, that's fine. He's like, I will work as a team, but don't ever ask me to give up track position.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, because I when they're like, what are you doing? You know, why are you fighting? And he's like, I'm not fighting. I'm racing.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm in front of him right now. He's got to get in front of me if he wants to get in front of me.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to drive better than me.
Yeah, you
know? Like, and I think he's also trying to teach the young kid, like, I'm not just gonna let you through.
Yeah,
you know, like, and that's sort of his message to him is like, we've got to fight. Like, nobody gets past us without fighting for it.
Yeah,
like, not even each other. You know, like, and I, you know, I kind of like this idea that Brad Pitt as the elder statesman of the sport is sort of like, I got really nothing to lose here. Like, I'm doing my friend a favor, and if they decide to fire me, so that's fine. I'll just go race somewhere else. But while I'm here, I might as well try to teach this young, talented driver like a thing or two about the sport. Yeah. But he's trying to tell Kerry Condon what's wrong with her car, and she's like, I'll listen to you when you finish a race, which is a great comeback too. It's like, don't tell me anything. You haven't finished a race yet. So then he just makes it his goal the next race to be like, I got to at least finish. I got to get us, you know, and I think he gets them to the point where like they score a point.
Yeah. That's what he does. Yeah. That's when he's like getting clipped each time. And he basically makes everybody listen to him. Cause I think in this race they get him, they're going to change his tire. He wants soft tires and they want him to have hard tires or something. Right. And he's like, they change his tires and he goes down and he doesn't move. And he doesn't go anywhere. And they're like, what are you doing? And he's like, he basically just waits until they put the tires that he told them to put on.
Right.
And so he does, but it ends up scoring points. They get a point and everybody's happy. And then from this point on, basically it's kind of his show. Like, he's really scrappy. He knows kind of the strategy that they should take in order to get points and kind of make the most of what they have to deal with.
This is what I mean though, when I say like, this movie, like, sort of has two protagonists who are each other's antagonists, but, like, it's Brad Pitt's movie. Like,
it is,
And of course it is. Like, he's the guy on the poster. He's the guy that we start out with. Like, he's who we start and finish with. He's the main character.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. I think that that's how it should be. But I also think that this relationship with him and the younger driver is compelling and makes for some good drama and some good, like, you know, post, you know, what are you smiling about? You know, we did, you know, it's very reminiscent of like Brad Pitt and Moneyball, you know?
Totally.
He's losing fun.
Yeah.
Well, why you act, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's what losing sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great line. Yeah.
That's a great.
Oh yeah. And it is, I do think about Driven though, again, the 2001 movie. And Sylvester Stallone and that driver, they get along a lot more, and it didn't work that well, like, for the movie itself. So I agree, this one, it does take too long, and maybe they could have reduced kind of, you know, JP's role, but at least it was more compelling, because you want to have that tension between the two characters, you know? So,
And again, like, these are all the little details that I like learning about, like soft tires versus hard tires and like how often they, you know, what there's the team just has all of these different tires and there's different times for different tires. And I liked all these details. And, Brad Pitt starts, you know, working with Kerry Condon on like some adjustments on this car. They can buy them, you know, but he starts trying to tell her, like, we need to build a car for combat. Like, I want to be able to be more aggressive and attack people. And she's like, I can't do that safely. And he's like, who said anything about being safe? You know, like, and we start to feel like there's maybe some momentum building on the team. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have this race in the rain where JP,
yes,
it looks like he actually could pull into leadership position, or like, yeah, I think like P1. I think he's, And he, Brad Pitt's been doing stuff to try to gain him that position in the back, trying to, you know, run people off the track and do different things to get, you know. And he's trying to coach him and tell him like, hey, wait, pick your moment here. And JP jumps the gun and has a huge crash. And
Well, and he tells him, he says, wait until turn one or something to make the move.
Yeah.
And I think he says like, don't go on the straight. And they're on a straight. He's behind Max Verstappen, who's a great driver. Mm-hmm. And all real F1 drivers in this movie that they talk about, besides these two, but everybody else, I mean, it's a year behind because they've all switched teams. Well, a lot of them have switched teams now, but really cool to see the actual real drivers just to kind of like make it a little more immersive. But he's behind Max Verstappen. He sees an opportunity, even though Brad Pitt tells him, wait, you know, which is kind of ultimately comes up this patience thing because JP doesn't have patience. Mm-hmm. Right. And so he sees an opening. He decides to take it. It's raining like crazy. Right. So you can barely see. And he takes the moment, but he ends up hitting, I think, the side of the track. He goes airborne and he, you know, falls over the fence and his car totally just.
I thought he was dead. I was like, that guy's dead. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And this, I mean, sheesh, I think it was season 3 or 4 of Drive to Survive, someone did actually on the Haas team, they ran into a wall and their car exploded.
Wow.
And there were flames. It's pretty crazy. The driver got out, but same thing, his hands got all burned.
Oof.
And anyway, but it was, so his car explodes, JP's car explodes, Brad Pitt gets out and, you know, is able to get him out of the car. But now JP is kind of like, you know, he's out of commission for like 3 races, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
3 or 4 races. And
JP's mom kind of threatens Brad Pitt. She's like, don't you ever put my son in a position like that ever again. He's like,
yeah, right. Well, yeah. And he's, but you know, and the thing is, Brad Pitt told him the right thing to do.
Right.
And JP didn't do it, but JP doesn't tell his mom that.
Right.
Again, kind of like,
mom, yell at him.
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is kind of, I felt like this was kind of the midpoint of the movie because, so for the next few races, Brad Pitt and this other reserve driver are racing and they do really, really well. They get up to like P4 and like P5 and like they're in all these, it's like everything is working well. And JP is like, he sees that everybody is doing so much better without him. So when he does come back, he's a total jerk and he runs Brad Pitt off the road and crashes Brad Pitt when they could have done better.
Which to me it is the, it's just kind of like, it's like, okay, let that be the last thing.
Let's have that.
Like a showdown between the two of them after this thing. And it's like, hey, man, you know, and then let's have them come together after this. But then we like still go on to like have like more all is, you know, like more turmoil with the team. Like, so that happens. And Brad Pitt has, you know, kind of has to be like, hey, man, what, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, and gets really mad at him and JP has this really smug kind of press conference where he's like, oh, it's too bad that contact happened with Sonny, you know? but it's also one of those weird things in sports that happens sometimes where someone will get injured and their replacement will come in and play better than them.
Yeah.
And it's always like weird. It's like, what are you supposed to do in that case? If your starting quarterback gets hurt and the replacement quarterback comes in and plays better, what are you supposed to do? And in my opinion, it's like if your team is dead last and you're getting last place in every, and the replacement comes in and you start getting P4, P5, like I think JP just lost his seat. You know, like to me, it's like, sorry, bro. Like, I think you lost your seat. Like, you know, like if you got to go with what's working, right?
You know, it can actually, that does happen in F1. Like, if, I mean, especially with Red Bull, they change out drivers a lot. So they, I think you are right, but this again, also some of the teams, you know, and he does seem like a promising talent. Sometimes they won't do that, but he comes back and he's a total jerk. I do agree with you actually. Like if this could have been the moment, like, okay, after this moment where he runs Brad Pitt off the track, let's start the resolution of their rivalry here because it doesn't start until the final race. Like
that's, maybe, that's like, And maybe it's like the two of them have like a one-on-one race,
yeah,
you know, like late at night, I mean, or something where they're like,
it's also, well, it's also set yeah. up because right. what happens is after this race, they go to Vegas.
Right.
And Carrie Condon's like, oh, she gets them to a bar and right. she's like, all right, we're going to work this out. Like right. we're going to play cards. And if Sonny wins, he's going to be the first racer. You know, he's going to be the number one racer. And if JP wins, he's going to be the number one racer. If I win, I'm going to choose who becomes a racer. So they like, yeah. they have this whole moment where they, which I guess is technically where their resolution starts because right. they're, you know, he's like, they both say like, you know, let's talk about constructive criticism. You see this in the, you know, like stop being a jerk. And you see that in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is pretty funny. And they do have this back and forth, but ultimately what happens is Brad Pitt tells JP, like, you're not patient. You need to be patient and just wait and listen so that you can learn. Right. So, but he doesn't do that because he goes all in on this. And then Brad Pitt like throws his cards away and JP wins, even though Brad Pitt had the better hand, yeah. he let him win. Right. So JP is still learning, but this actually would have been the better time to actually have him start to get it probably.
Well, cause like, but that's a perfect opportunity to teach that lesson yeah. that it's like you yeah. wanted to go all in and like this is my point is you lost. You
yeah, know? That
you've got to
yeah.
you've got to pick your moment better. And it's like there, but instead, I don't know what lesson Brad Pitt's teaching JP by just letting him have it. It's sort of like let the baby have its bottle. But I'm like, yeah. well, that doesn't really get us anywhere because you're right. We're beginning something with this poker scene, but then I feel like yeah. it doesn't, I feel like it just ends in a place where Brad Pitt kind of wants to like impress Carrie Condon so they can hook yeah. up and be like, look, I won the game, but I let the kid win. Let's go.
That is kind of, that is, yeah. that's exactly what happens.
Like, let's go pick up.
You know, yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, she, that's, yeah. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Yep.
She's they like hook super up. Impressed that he,
yeah. that he lied and won.
Yeah. yeah. And they hook up and which we knew was going to happen. But then, yeah, we go to the race and we find out that that somebody, an anonymous person, has said that there are new aspects yes. of their redesign on their car that might break league rules and that they have to race with their old car. And, you know, obviously everyone is furious. Javier Bardem's furious. Brad Pitt's furious. Everyone's pissed off. And Brad Pitt has a great, like, racing angry scene, which this is another yeah. thing that a lot of racing movies have is like there's going to be a scene where our main character is driving mad, you know, yeah.
and he doesn't have his card. He doesn't have his yeah. card in his pocket, so he's pissed.
He's mad. And yeah. there's a great scene in Speed Racer where like there's a thing that happens in the movie where Speed gets double crossed mm-hmm. by someone that he had a deal with, and he goes out on the track late at night. He's just driving mad, just screaming like you know, like do you know, and it's great. Yeah. And it's like yeah. it's like every good racing movie should have a good driving mad
yeah.
scene.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I like this, but I also it's just like it's at this point in the film, we've already had like okay, the first race, they yeah. crash into each other yeah. and they both crash and they don't finish. Then, you know, like Brad Pitt's able to like he's fighting with the pit crew over like tires and he wants them to listen to him and they get yeah. in a big fight over that. Then he's able to like get JP to score a point. But then like in their next race, JP crashes and they have this big fallout. Yeah. JP yeah. comes back. He makes Brad Pitt crash. Then yeah. like they play cards against each other. They go out to Vegas. Oh no. It's like, there's just,
yeah, probably one too many.
It's getting to the point where I'm like, we need to have like two or so less of fewer of these, or maybe consolidate yeah. them into like one race. And what we find out is that this shareholder who's sort of been this character that we've been watching in the periphery, who Javier Bardem introduced earlier in the film, he's probably the guy who did the anonymous tip and got the team.
Yeah.
The team doesn't do well in Vegas at all. And Brad Pitt gets kicked off the team. Cause
yeah.
he's
well, yeah, he crashed. So yeah. he crashes and then Javier Bardem sees him in the hospital and he's like, he tells like, throughout the whole movie, we've seen that Brad Pitt had this huge crash mm-hmm. in his early career against Senna, right? Like a really famous F1 racer. And he like was out on the track. And like, anyway, Javier Bardem is like, oh, you have three cracked vertebrae and blah, 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 blah. Like all this. And he's like, that was like 30 years ago. And he's like, this is from your first crash. And he's like, you shouldn't even be racing because you could die. Like yeah. at any time, right? Like, and I did again. This is the Javier Bardem of it all, because I really like this scene. First of all, because this character usually doesn't do that in these type of movies. But also you see where Javier Bardem is coming from, because he doesn't want to kill his friend.
Right.
Like, he doesn't want his friend to die on the track. Well, he's so he's mad, like, you're off the team.
He's mad at him too, that he's like, why didn't you tell me? He's like, you were putting me in a really tough, he's like, you know, and Brad Pitt's kind of point is like, it's not your place to tell me whether or not I can't, he's like, whether I can or can't take that risk. You know, I get to say whether I, you know, there's nothing, it's not your decision to say whether or not I get behind the wheel of a car. But Javier Bardem's like, hey man, I don't want to be responsible for your death. You're my friend, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that much to me. Like, I'd rather you, you know, and I like that. And he fires him literally, 'cause he's like, it's not safe for you to be doing this.
Yeah.
And, it's not like, but again, it's like, it's an all is lost moment again.
Right before the third act, this is the all is lost moment, even though they've had like a couple of,
we've had a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And and Brad Pitt finds out that it's the shareholder who's been trying to kind of like tank the team so that he can sell it, and get the best possible, you know, price for it.
Yeah.
And he wants to bring Brad Pitt along with him, I guess, for the next, he's like, hey, you know, you and me can do really well on this deal together.
Yeah. Well, he's like, you could be the team lead, and you know, it's all up to you, and you can run the team and all that. So Brad Pitt's kind of like playing it cool, like, all right, like, okay, that's cool. And so he gets the number from the guy, and but he figures everything out. So then we go to the final race, the final race in Abu Dhabi, and I mean, you know, by this time, everybody is on Brad Pitt's side. Like, he has this little routine where he runs around the track, right? And so, like, throughout the movie, all the pit crew has, you know, one at a time have been running with him. And then by this point, everybody is running, but JP is now running with everybody. And so, like, he has given in to Brad Pitt as well, right?
Yeah, like, it's a little visual storytelling of...
Yeah, yeah.
And this is, again, like... I think for F1 fans, they know all these tracks. They know the difference between all the, they know like the culture of these different like racing communities around the world and these different tracks. For me, I wasn't seeing visually like enough of like what makes each track, what are the challenges? And I kind of like, that's a thing in Speed Racer that, again, it's a cartoon and it's an acid trip and it's crazy, but each race is so, each track is so different and has its own like things that in this race, it's like, this is the thing in this race that you've got to like get right. And
they didn't have that in this one for sure.
Yeah. I kind of would have liked that if they could, there could have been an element of like, the thing about this track is I don't know. You know.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, there. I don't think there's as many of that, as much of that in the actual real races. There definitely are. Like, there are parts, but I don't know enough to. But I know that there are. There are various things that are different, right? Like, it's always going to rain at this track, or it's always going to have something. You know, you go. It's going to be way too hot, so you've got to. You know, in Abu Dhabi, sometimes it's like 120 degrees, so you got to stay cool. They could have. Had something, but again, they have enough. It's already long enough. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of information in this movie. Mm-hmm. And that's just one more thing where I'm like, but I think if you're going to have 9 races, then maybe that can give it, they can break it up a little bit.
A little bit. Or,
but, or make it feel, and they, again, I don't know that the movie needs to have that many.
Yeah.
Whatever. I've already been to all that, but we get to this final race and Brad Pitt does wind up showing up, and it's kind of like, you know, he like tells Javier Bardem like, well, I don't, you know, you haven't paid me my last paycheck, so I'm still technically a part of this team. He rips up his paycheck in front of him and he's like, so until you pay me, I, you know, and he's basically just kind of going, hey man, just let me do this last one, you know, like, and he knows that it's that it's this shareholder guy, this board member guy that's like behind everything. And I like this little moment where the guy's looking at him like from a box and Brad Pitt like asks a crew member, he's like, hey, can I see your phone? And he like, texts him, and he just texts him an emoji of like flipping him off.
Flip off emoji. Yeah. That was pretty funny. And he's like, oh, this guy's like, oh crap, you know, which obviously he's gonna get his comeuppance, but so he's been trying to sell the team, it's not working. So they start this final race, and I'm trying to even, like, you can tell this was definitely something that I thought, I don't know if they necessarily needed this, but like Brad Pitt's like vision is going out.
Right.
And he's like, he's having a really rough time, which I got like, okay, you had that bad crash and now it's like really hard for you. But also like, this is one of those things that like, maybe this is a little too much, you know?
Yeah. And it's like an element where I'm like, hey, if the movie wants to do this, if the movie wants to say that because of the crash he had 30 years ago, he experiences this thing where sometimes when the car is going really fast, the G forces make his vision kind of blur. Yeah. And I'm like, bake that into the movie earlier, like put that in, like, but I get that the movie's saying like this most recent crash exacerbates his old injury and bring, but I'm like, okay. And that's why I kind of think like the most recent crash in Vegas is it's just like one thing too many. Cause I think Javier Bardem could probably find out about this stuff without him even needing to crash.
True. You know? True.
I think Javier Bardem could just come to him and be like, hey man, I just pulled your medical records. And like, why didn't you tell me about this? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like that.
I agree.
Yeah. Maybe it just doesn't need to be in the movie. You know, maybe it's just one thing too many, like you said, but because it just feels like it's just one extra. There's just so many obstacles in this movie for this protagonist to overcome. And those obstacles in a sports drama are good. It just feels like this movie has one after another, after another.
There's a lot. Yeah.
By the time we're in this last race, I was kind of just in my seat. I was just like, let's go. Like, just I know he's going to win. Yeah. Let's just go. And it was thrilling the way that it all unfolds, that like, it looks like JP's going to be the one to take the victory. And
Well, and they do this thing with their tires. They stay out on their tires longer than they should, which is a strategy that some teams use. Right. Which was, I thought was good because it was like, it kind of like JP takes the lead, but then like his tires are so old and everybody else has had so many tires that they kind of like, the one and two overtake him, right? And one of the people is Lewis Hamilton, who is a producer on this movie. I think he was a big part of getting this movie made. Lewis Hamilton and Toto Wolff. Anyway, so like he's got to go after Lewis Hamilton, and Lewis Hamilton is very aggressive, like as a driver, which was just kind of a fun thing. Again, just kind of into the realism of it. But they do this, his tires are really old, but then I think Sonny did kind of cause this crash. He causes a crash, and it's a bad enough crash that they have to stop the race, and you can change your tires and you can kind of, you know, get everything going. And this was the miracle. They keep talking about like, oh, we need a miracle to help us. Like,
there's a lot of things that this screenplay sets up. Like
early on
in the film, like, you know, it's like Javier Bardem says, if you win for one day, you can call yourself the greatest. Yeah. And also earlier on in the film, when Javier Bardem was trying to get Sonny to be on the team, he says to him, hey, you ever seen a miracle? And Javier Bardem says, no. And he goes, me neither. And it's just sort of like, so like they're setting up a lot of things. And then also earlier in the film, Brad Pitt's talking to Kerry Condon and he gives this speech about how sometimes when I'm driving, everything goes quiet.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm gliding and I feel like I'm flying out on the track.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that he goes, and every time I'm driving, I'm chasing that feeling. And there's all these things that like sports dramas will say things like this. And you're like, okay, we know this is setting up. So there's going to be a miracle in this race. It's going to take a miracle for them to come from last to first by the end of the season. There's going to be, you know, a moment where Brad Pitt feels like he's flying, like they're going to pay off. And there's going to be, you know, when he wins, it's going to be, you're the greatest in the world. You know, like we're going to pay off.
Yeah. And it does all get paid off. But so there's this crash. And this type of crash actually did happen when Max Verstappen won his first driver's championship, which was kind of funny. But they had to stop the race and then they had to start it again with like three laps left. So there's a crash. Everybody gets to change. They all get to change their tires. So the, you know, positions 1, 2, 3, and 4 are like, it's like Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc, I think. And then Brad Pitt and JP. They're like,
how do they secure that after a crash? Do they like let them exit the pit in order of like one gets to go first and then
they either restart the race or I think they do go from the pit or something. I'm not exactly sure, but I think they restarted from the actual positions, like the pole positions.
Interesting. And then they have everybody go into the position of like,
Then they go. And I mean, some people are laps behind, right? Or whatever, but so basically these four. But the advantage that their team has, that Sonny and JP have, is that there's two of them and they work together as a team. So this is kind of what's happening. Like Charles Leclerc kind of, you know, gets out of the race, but then Lewis Hamilton and JP are kind of going at it. And while they're going, Lewis Hamilton and JP get in a crash and they're completely out of the race. We thought at this point that JP was going to win the race. Like he was going to win it, but then he gets in a crash and he's like, go get him, old man, or whatever, you know, he says. And
yeah.
And at this point we see Brad Pitt and the last like lap, we kind of just, you know, you kind of cut back and forth between Brad Pitt and everybody else. And he's like all the sound kind of goes out and he is like flying, right? That's Perry Condon's like, oh, he's flying.
There's corny line here where somebody's like, it's like, we don't have a good enough car. And Aubrey Everdem goes, but we have the driver.
That's right. Yeah. It's like such a stereotypical line.
Yeah. And like, also, you know, like somebody at one point in the pit crew goes, the miracle. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like, it's just like, you know, like all this stuff where it's like, okay. Yeah.
Totally. And this, it ends pretty much just the sound of the car, him driving that last lap. Mm-hmm. And he wins, and then all the, you know, and it's a really good like winning moment. Like, oh wow, this is cool.
Finish your
thought. I was gonna say I liked it. It was set up just as we've talked about. Like he is flying, and it's all works, and the visuals are awesome. Like it's very very pretty. I personally wish it would have been a little bit more of him being scrappy and like having to do a couple more things to kind of hold guys off, but he does it maybe a little more legally than he usually does, but like with his driving tactics, he actually gets it through. And I kind of wish that was the ending. But,
so, and this is where I want you to watch Speed Racer and tell me.
Okay. Okay.
Like, I feel like the construction of these two films is actually weirdly so similar. It's just Speed Racer tonally and aesthetically is a completely different world.
Right.
And again, like there's stuff in Speed Racer that you just have to keep constantly remind yourself, like this is an 80s children's anime show. Yeah. Like it's, you know, but like, the end of the film is that the same thing where like all these things that have been set up kind of the whole movie are, you know, they're going to get paid off. It's like, this is the big race the end, all this stuff that people have said, but the way that they pay, like in the final stretch of Speed doing what, you know, he's going to do, the way that they pay it off feels so euphoric and like, it's just so like amazing to watch him coming down. Like this thing happens where like his car peels out and gets complete, like it won't start, like the engine's like dead.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there, and like earlier in the film his brother told him like, you can just listen to a car and it'll tell you what it means. And his dad's sitting in the audience, and his dad's like, if he puts the car in fifth gear he can jump start the engine. And his mom's like, will he know that? And the dad's like, and then it just shows Speed and he's just listening to the car, and he's like, and all these cars are passing him, like everyone in the race is passing him. And then he all of a sudden just opens his eyes and puts the car in fifth and just goes, and the car just like kicks into this and he just, it's just the last leg of the race is him just blasting past everyone in the, and like just like throwing other cars off the track, and all the announcers are just screaming, they're all like you know, like, and the whole and the track is like melting, like it's doing like this crazy like psychedelic thing where like the colors on the track are like melting off the screen as he's like, you know, and everyone in the audience is like, what is he doing? Like, and it just feels like so much more.
Yeah.
Like I want that from the end of this movie. I want everyone in the pit crew to like be grabbing each other and being like, because it's like, it's like, this is impossible. A guy who used to drive 30 years ago, who like left the sport 30 years ago, comes back in midway through a season on the team that's last place, and in the final race of the season is pulling into first position. Everyone in the state, and they are, but I want that feeling of like the awe of it, you know.
I
think what Joe Kaczynski goes with instead is like the quiet of the whole movie's been this big adrenaline punch, and instead it's just like this quiet, easy glide into across the finish line, you know.
And I wish it was a little more like that, but I'm not mad at it, because it was set up and it's very it's very much thematically fitting. But I do wish it was a little more of what you said, right? Like, I wish it was a little bit more intense, a little bit more loud, but it's okay. But he wins the race. He still doesn't want to touch the trophy. He tells him to give it to Javier Bardem.
Right.
Right. So he does. Right. And then Brad Pitt just kind of like leaves. And
right.
He's like, you know, he does have a, he has a meetup with JP and he's like, hey, you're going to be a great racer kid. You know, like, and he's like, JP's like, oh, I'm going to win a million races. I thought you should have one.
Yeah.
Right. And they kind of have their resolution. He meets up with Kerry Condon and they're kind of like, you know, I'll see you down the road or whatever they say.
Yeah.
He does. And Brad Pitt does. He takes out the card in his pocket and he looks at it and he just kind of smiles. We don't ever see what the card is, but I actually, what's that?
We don't see what it is.
We never see what it is, but he kind of like laughs and then he puts it back in his pocket. I liked that because at that moment I was like, oh, it's just kind of like luck of the draw. Like he doesn't know what the card is, but now that's going to be like his lucky card. I thought that was like, this is a cool little detail.
That it's like, so he's always been putting a random card in his pocket.
Yeah.
And whatever card that is, if he ever wins, he'll look at it.
Right.
And then he knows. But then, I don't know. He's won races, but I guess.
I feel like that's like, okay, this is the race where I'm going to look at it. Like, this is my lucky card. And he just smiles at whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. It's the instructions.
Oh, I forgot to take those out.
I forgot to take that one out. Well, all right.
Well, instructions.
I mean, I guess that's my card.
That's how it goes. But I like that. I like that little detail. And then he goes to Mexico and he starts racing in Baja. And the credits roll while he's riding on the dunes and all that stuff.
So. Yeah. Listen. After talking about it with you too, like I got like it's a pretty cool movie. It is a crowd pleasing. I get why people are having like the audience response for this is mm-hmm. overwhelmingly I think it's got like a 98% audience score or something.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so I know I am in the minority here. It's not even that like I didn't have like a bad time at the movie. I just sort of. This is the weird thing about subjective. This is why we do a subjective score is because at the end of the day, I just was like, you know, this one just, I knew what this movie was going to be before it started.
Yep.
I knew that it was going to follow certain formulaic beats. I didn't have a problem with any of that.
Yeah.
For some reason, it just didn't quite get in the way that I want a sports drama to. And I left the theater being like, for my money, for me, subjectively, if I'm going to watch that movie and have the experience that movie was trying to give me, I'm going to go watch Speed Racer because it gets inside my heart more.
Yeah.
Even though it's a completely, it's like, well, Speed Racer's not real. Like F1's real. And there are so many cool aspects of this movie. I love that it's real. I love that the real drivers are in the movie. Yeah. I love that they shot this movie alongside the real season. I think there's so many things that are really, really cool. I love that Brad Pitt is really driving a crazy car, 200 miles per hour. And that we're like with him in the car. I think there's so many cool things about it. That's F1, the movie, or just F1. Let's get into our scores.
Let's do it.
If this is your first time watching our podcast, we give scores out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a score for technical achievements. So that's just sort of how the technical construction of the film, the craft, how well we feel like the script, the editing, the sound design, special effects, all that stuff was executed, acting, everything. The ending of the film, how well they stuck the landing, rewatchability for the film, cultural significance of the film, and subjective score. And Kramer, what is your technical rating for F1?
My technical rating is an 8.
Yeah.
The cinematography, everybody's working really, really well. Mm-hmm. It's a really well-made film, like just technically from every aspect. I don't think there was anything that was really weak. Besides the fact that it is standard as a sports story. Mm-hmm. It's like following all the beats.
Yeah.
And it's hitting all the beats and kind of the things that we talked about. It might be a little bit too long. They have a few too many times where it's like all is lost, like we've said.
Yeah.
But so many movies do that and they do it wrong or they do it in a horrible way. So this movie, I think, is just it's above average for sure. And I just had such a fun time. I mean, again, that's more on the subjective score, but this is, you know, this is a great, great movie. So I think technically for sure it's an 8.
Yeah. I'm right underneath you at a 7.5 for technical.
Nice.
And I think I mean, I might be able to bump it up to an 8 too, because I feel like this was hard for me, because I'm like, they definitely made the movie that they set out to make.
Yeah.
Accomplished. Like, Brad Pitt wanted to make an epic movie about F1. He did. Joe Kaczynski wanted to execute this thing with the camera rigging the same way that he did with Top Gun. He was able to pull that off again. The sound design team did an excellent job of, like, you know, doing what they need to do. Hans Zimmer did a great job. All the actors are doing everything they can to elevate the material. Where the movie technically skids for me is that I think, yeah, exactly what we just said. It goes, there's one too many things that slow us down. And I think that the racing sequences for me at a certain point started to feel a little bit just like repetitive, which I think, you know, for me is like the thing about racing in general is that it's like, if I'm watching, NASCAR in particular race, after like 5 or 6 laps, I'm kind of like, yeah, I got it. They're driving fast.
They're driving fast
in circles. Yeah.
All left turns.
Yeah. Like, my girlfriend said to me at the end of the movie, she goes like, I get that car go fast, but also the car will go fast for so long. And I was like, right.
That's a good way to put it.
She's like, yeah, car go fast. And like, that's cool. I love that for them. I love that car go fast, but need to go fast for 2.5 hours. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, yeah, I don't know. I was like, I feel the same way. Like, I think 2 hours would have been nice, or like maybe just under, you know,
would have been
a solid runtime for this film. So 7.5, I could maybe think about bumping it up to an 8. Cause maybe I'm letting my subjective feeling get mixed up in that. Cause everything else, I think everyone's doing a really nice job. I will bump it up to an 8. I will.
Okay. All right.
And how about ending for you?
The ending I gave a 7.5, a little bit lower, just because, like, as I talked about, I would have loved to have seen a little bit more of his scrappy driving, or just his technical driving of like really leading the race. Right. Like, that would have been fun. But thematically, it was set up and it was paid off, and a lot of the stuff was paid off. I still had a ton of fun with it. So that's why I feel like 7.5, because it was I still enjoyed it and I still had a lot of fun. Don't know if it completely stuck the landing, but I still liked what we got.
Again, I'm just a half point underneath you. I'm at a 7 for the ending. Good. The ending did exactly what we knew it would do. Yeah. You're watching a racing movie, like, or any sports drama. It's like, there's one of two endings. They're going to win, or they're going to lose in a way that feels triumphant.
Like
those are the two endings of sports movies. Like, it's like, it, like, you know, Rocky Balboa is going to lose, but it's going to feel like a win because he went the distance with Apollo Creed.
Exactly.
Or, you know, or in all of the other movies, he's just going to win. he's just going to win in all of the other ones. And those are the two endings. And it's like, this movie, it's like, it was clear he was going to win.
Yeah.
I think that the way they do it, that's the thing, is like, okay, we're here now. We're at Abu Dhabi. We're in the final race.
Yeah.
How are you going to pull this off so it feels really satisfying, even though we all know what it's going to be?
Yeah.
And that, it didn't hit for me as hard as I wanted it to.
Right.
But you know, it was pretty good. So 7.
Yeah. Nice.
How about rewatchability for you?
Rewatchability, I gave an 8. It's a fun movie. I think it's probably better in the theater than it will be at home, but it'll still be a fun watch at home. I think it is long, and I think that's why I'm docking it a little bit, because the length and the things we've talked about might get a little more cheesy as you watch it. You know, some of those, it's the miracle, you know, that line.
We have the driver.
Yeah.
And it's like, those are, you got to say lines like that in a racing movie.
You do.
I gave this movie a 6, and I think what this movie made me realize is that if I'm in the mood to watch a racing movie, I need to rewatch Speed Racer more often. Last night, not only did I rent Speed Racer, I bought it. I was like, I'm going to own this movie. And I was like, if I have a need to watch a movie about racing, I'm going to watch Speed Racer. And I don't know that I'm going to go to F1 right away, because I haven't watched Top Gun Maverick since I saw it in the theater. I like what Joe Kaczynski has done with these two films, but I think also, like, they were kind of experiences for me where I was like, yeah, that was really fun. And I don't know that it's going to pack the same punch at home as it did in the movie theater.
Yeah.
And, also I feel like they're movies where, like, narratively they're pretty thin, and they're not, like, I don't think there's a lot more there under the surface to discover.
Yeah.
So I love rewatching Moneyball. Like, I just think that, like, the beats of that, you know,
that movie's great.
That Aaron Sorkin script that's just like so. I always love coming back to it and hearing them. And this movie had a lot of information that I thought was interesting about racing that I might want to that I might get more on a rewatch.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Like, the length is going to be a deterrent to me to want to just jump back into this. And I think that for racing fans, this is going to be like an all time classic of like, going to go in the, you know, with Driven and Days of Thunder and all the, you know, and the early Fast and the Furious movies. Cultural significance.
Again, this is a hard one. I gave it a 7, which is kind of, that's kind of the standard one that we give. It is, it is doing really, really well for this type of movie. This is an original movie. I mean, it's based on an existing IP, but it's an original film, right? And done by Apple and Warner Brothers. And it's doing really, really well. I think this is just contributing to the good summer that we're having. So I probably could bump it up to like a 7.5 just because it's like things are going well and this is a good time to have this movie. And I do think that this is going to be a movie that you can look back and like, okay, this is a really well-made sports movie that hits all the beats, and it's done really, really well. And it also, it's a movie that doesn't use as much CGI as it could have.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really cool thing. So, you know, I'm going to bump it up to a 7.5 because of that extra little beat that they went and they did it for real.
Yeah.
Right. And like, there is CGI in this movie and it's definitely, I'm sure there's more than we realize, but it's done so well, it makes it look so real, and they really went for it. And so I think it's going to be really impactful in that sense, probably more in the technical sense than the story sense. But yeah, so 7.5.
Yeah, I gave it a 7 for the same reasons. It's doing well. Its audiences are responding really well to it. I think culturally, like when I think about the cultural impact of a film, it's like, I think this movie is going to be another really strong feather in the cap of Joe Kaczynski as a director. Yeah. And like, he might be really coming on as like a new, like, or like a big voice in you know, action summer blockbuster filmmaking. And I think this is another, like, I think it's a big win for Brad Pitt and Plan B. And, you know, and I think it's a big win for practical filmmaking, which is important right now. Yeah. And so I think culturally it does a lot of the same things that Mission Impossible did, where it's like a good like testament to the enduring power of grounded practical filmmaking on a big scale and a good argument for that. And again, like, it's weird because the movie that I keep talking about, Speed Racer, is like the exact opposite of that. It's like, it's just like, it's all tech. Yeah. It's all just like, but I think that it's executed at such a high level. It's like, okay, if you're going to do it, lean into it and go like that, you know? But you know, it's the opposite of, but anyway, I think this movie culturally will make a big splash. What's your subjective score?
My subjective score is an 8.5. Had a ton of fun with this. I loved it from beginning to end. You know, had a great time with my brother, had a great time with our kids. They loved it too. Like, my son today bought an F1 shirt, and my kids all have F1 shirts now. Like, you know, my son is wearing a McLaren shirt today. My other one has a McLaren and a Max Verstappen shirt. Anyway, it's a fun, and I, you know, I am enjoying F1, the series on Netflix, and I just kind of like the sport. So it was totally, as you said at the beginning of this movie, it's an England boys film. I loved it. I totally gave into it. Definitely problems as we've talked about. And I totally see everything you're talking about, but I was able to overlook it. And it just a ton of fun at the theater.
I mean, I think that most people who are seeing this movie are agreeing with you that it's a really good time.
Yeah.
This is the score that we're the most different on. We're actually pretty close on pretty much everything: technical ending, rewatchability, and cultural. The subjective one is, this is why we do a subjective score, is because you can't really, there's no really good way to quantify just how you feel about a movie at the end of the day. And my subjective score is a 6, just because this movie, what it made me want to do was go watch a different movie. I was like, well, this movie just made me think about how much I like Speed Racer. And then I watched Speed Racer, and the whole time I was like, I like this so much more. And then I just was like, well, I can't say that Joe Kaczynski didn't do a good job. I can't say that Hans Zimmer's music isn't good. I can't say that the acting isn't good. I can't say that the cinematography isn't good. All I can say is that subjectively, I just sort of left the film like, okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I didn't not enjoy myself. So it's not like, it's not like I had a negative experience.
Yeah.
I enjoyed myself slightly more than like, whatever, you know?
No. And that's the point of doing these separate scores.
Right.
Because you've given it all the accolades that it needs for everything else. And then you don't have to feel bad about giving it a low score because that's just what you feel. And that's what movies are subjective.
Yeah.
The subjective is the most important, but you're still giving it credit in the other departments where it did great. Right. So that's what because like when you try to mash them all together, it's like, well, I want to give it a 6, but it did so well in this other subject. Right. So that's why the scores, again, you don't have to feel bad about a low subjective score because sometimes you just can't really put your finger on it. And that's just how it goes.
Like, I bet we'll have people in the comments of this video being like, Speed Racer? What? Like, what? You know, because like, I think a lot of people have seen it once and they were like, never, I'm never watching because it's just such it is a wild movie.
Yeah.
But I always liked it from the first time I saw it. And I can't even really put my finger on why. Like, every criticism that Speed Racer gets, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I completely get it.
Yeah.
Like, but I go like, I like it though. It's sort of like when my ex-partner once said about the show, I think you should leave. We did the movie Friendship.
Yeah.
We were talking about Tim Robinson and she didn't like Tim Robinson's comedy. And I was like showing her different sketches and she was just sitting there and she goes, he's just screaming. And I went, yeah, but it's great. And it's like, she's not wrong that he's just screaming. Like she's right. He's just yelling a lot and screaming. Yeah. But I like it that he's, you know, so it's the thing where it's like, she doesn't like the way that he screams and I do like it. And that's the Speed Racer thing where it's like, some people are like, it's so much, it's like visually assaulting you. And I'm like, yes. And I like it. And I, and I think they do a good job with it. I think it's like, it works for me. And I totally get people watching that being like, no, this is way too much. This is what, you know, or thinking it's corny or thinking it's over the top. Right. And I completely get people watching F1 and having a great time and just being like on a roller coaster with the movie.
Yeah.
And I think the movie's really cool. And like, I think Brad Pitt's cool. And I think that it, you know, I think F1 racing seems just like insane and crazy and cool.
Yeah.
But for some reason, my emotional experience with it, maybe this is a change on a rewatch, was a little bit just kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yep.
And I can't explain why.
No.
So
that's how it goes.
That's how it goes. Let us know out there. Have you seen F1? Have you seen Speed Racer? And have you seen Driven? And how do you feel about racing movies in general? Did you have a good time with this one? Comment, like, share, subscribe, all those good things. If you want to keep up with us, we are watching Jurassic World Afterbirth.
Jurassic World Afterbirth is the next one. Rebirth. It is Rebirth, right? Yeah, Rebirth.
I believe so. It'd be crazy if they named a movie Afterbirth.
Afterbirth. Jurassic Park or Jurassic World Afterbirth.
Afterbirth. What, you guys?
Yeah.
That should be the sequel to Rebirth. But that is what we will be watching next. So go to the theater and check it out if you want to watch along with us. And we will see you then.
Bye-bye.